Phil Nason Show. That was John Fogerty, Centerfield, on the Friday edition. It's May 17th, 2013, and we're talking baseball on today's Phil Nason Show, as we do each and every Friday. Coming up later, Eric Stephen and I will be talking Dodger baseball, followed by Mark Berman and I talking Mets baseball. But up first, from AthleticsNation.com, Mr. Alex Hall. Alex, what's up, dude? How are you?
S.O.S. Save Oakland's starters.
Okay. What's up with the starters?
Their ERAs, that's what's up. But we got, you know, we got six guys who are supposed to be good starting pitchers here, and right now two of them are getting the job done. And that's Tommy Malone, who's still doing pretty well, except for a rough start last time, and A.J. Griffin, who's really starting to come on strong. He's got that ERA down about 3.5, getting 3 strikeouts for every walk. He's really starting to round back into the form he was in last year, and hopefully he can keep being that consistent strike-throwing presence that he was last year. But you got Bartolo Colon. The luster is starting to wear off a little bit. He's given up 17 runs in his last four starts, and he doesn't go deep into the game. So if he's given up three or four runs in a game, that's not so good. He's given up five homers in his last three starts, and he did not strike out anybody in six innings in his last start against Texas. And then you've still got Jared Parker. He's starting to come around a little bit, but the going is slow as he tries to get over his early season struggles. And I try to look and figure out what might be up with him, and I have to notice he seems to do well for the first few innings before he falls apart. And you look, the first two times through the batting order, opponents hitting about an 800 OPS, which isn't really very good, but you know that's maybe solid at least. But when he gets to that third time through the order, he's just getting shelled, like a 1300 OPS the third time through the order. And the problem is, if you can only go through the order twice, guaranteed, even if you went through perfectly, you'd go through six innings. Realistically, you're probably going to make four or five innings if you go through the order twice. So if you can't do that third time through the order, you're just never going to get very deep into games. I don't know if it's a matter of endurance or if the hitters just figure him out and he's not mixing it up enough to get through those three times, but he's got to change something. I don't know. He's got to figure something out. I know he's trying to make a lot of adjustments, and I know these guys try, to get over these struggles as hard as they can, but right now it's going deep into the game that is his problem. And then the other guy that's supposed to be in the rotation, Brett Anderson, he was supposed to come off the DL for his last start, and he didn't. He's supposed to come off for his next start, and it's starting to sound like his sprained ankle is not ready to go yet, so he might still miss another start. And his replacement has been Dan Straley, young pitcher, also just not getting the job done. His fastball seems really hittable. Which when you got a hittable fastball, it's going to be a lot tougher to set up your secondary pitches. 26 innings he's thrown. He's given up 26 hits and 12 walks. That's a lot of base runners. He gets his strikeouts, but when he doesn't strike you out, you usually hit him pretty hard. I'm starting to wonder if maybe he could use a little turn in the bullpen. When you got the starting pitcher moves to the bullpen, he only has to throw one or two innings instead of five or six. Sometimes you find these guys can add a little bit of sauce to their fastball. He's throwing 91 right now. If he can bump that up a couple miles, maybe that's enough for him to throw two really effective innings at a time instead of getting shelled in four or five innings every time.
Yeah, that makes sense, I guess. But Bartolo Colon, I don't know what to say about him, really. And the thing is people are talking about him and his inability to go deep. And they're saying, well, that's because last year he was juicing, and this year he's not. Does that make sense?
He wasn't going that deep into the games last year either. That's not true. He would have some very long starts, but the pitch count would never get very high. He's routinely coming out after 80 or 90 pitches. He very rarely, if ever, hits 100 pitches anymore. It's just last year he was getting the job done, sometimes making it through seven or even eight innings. And this year, those 70 or 80 pitches are getting him through the fifth or the sixth. The stuff is hittable. He needs to hit his spots and fool the hitters into taking the strikes. That's where he gets his success, because nothing he throws is difficult to hit. And so when they do start making contact against him, that's when he starts giving up, five homers and three starts. When they start going up after that fastball that paints the corner, he doesn't get the strikeouts anymore. So I don't know that anything has fundamentally changed. It's just so far not working out that well for him. I also don't really buy into that stuff really had any effect on him last year. I don't really see any connection between his drugs and his performance last year. He's doing the same stuff he did last year. This year, I don't know. But when I look around and I try to think of who else the A's can call on here to replace some innings, it's mid-May. You're not going to acquire a new starting pitcher in mid-May. That just does not happen. Nobody is shopping their starting pitchers right now. And so it's going to have to be somebody from within the organization. You've got Sonny Gray, the first-round pick from a couple of years ago. He's doing real well in AAA right now. He's winning a bunch of games. His ERA is down around two. But he is walking a lot of guys. And I know, first off, there's no way he's coming up right now. He's only made like seven starts in AAA. They're going to give him more time no matter what he's doing. But until he brings those walks down a little bit, I'm not going to be sold on him transitioning to the majors, because that's one of those things. If you're walking a lot of guys in the minors, you're going to walk even more in the majors. It's not going to get better when you get up there. The strike zone's a little tighter. The batters are going to lay off some of those pitches they might chase in AAA. And so the walks are not going to go down when he gets to the majors. So I'd like to see him stay down, get a little more work in AAA. The other two guys that were supposed to be some of the depth down there, named Andrew Werner and Bruce Billings, they are both struggling terribly in AAA. They don't really look like viable options. And that leaves us with one other in-house option to make a couple of spot starts. It's a guy who I never in a million years would have thought I would be advocating for a start in Oakland. I am very much not a fan, but he's a man. He's already on the 25-man roster, and his name is Jesse Chavez. He's been a bit of a minor league journeyman, but he's a guy who's got very good stuff. He just doesn't have very good control. You look through his minor league stats, and he gets a ton of strikeouts. Even in the majors, he's had some good strikeout totals. But he also just walks too many guys and misses too many spots. He's been the occasional mop-up man long reliever in Oakland, mostly without very much success. And he hasn't really gotten a lot of love from A's fans, myself included. But I look at his stats this year. He made five starts in Sacramento for AAA, and he did very well. The five starts were very good, very effective. And he's thrown 10 innings up here in Oakland already this year. 8 strikeouts, 3 walks, decent ERA. He just gave up his first homer. And, you know, I look at all these numbers, and they're tiny sample sizes, but they say to me, hey, maybe this guy is worth a shot just for one game. See what he can do. Right now, you're losing decisively with guys like Straley on the mound. What's the difference? Worst case scenario, you lose decisively with someone new on the mound. Best case scenario, Chavez puts up a good start, and you found your next unexpected Oakland A's contributor. When I look a little deeper at him to figure out maybe why he's doing better this year, I noticed that he seems to have scrapped his fastball, which he used to throw over half the time. Now he's throwing it less than 20% of the time. His fastball was a very poor pitch for him in the past. He seems to have replaced it with a cut fastball. And his cutter, not great, but it's decent. It seems to be getting the job done. He's also hitting the strike zone a lot more. For a guy whose biggest problem is walks and lack of control, it's a very good sign to see him hitting the strike zone far more than he was, you know, previously. And when the batters do hit it, they're keeping the ball on the ground. Significantly fewer line drives than he's been giving up in the past. And I wonder, maybe, you know, throwing that cutter instead of the fastball, maybe he's getting guys to roll over on it or something. I don't know. It's only been 10 innings. He only threw a few innings last year. So these numbers are all very unreliable in small sample sizes. But, you know, we're getting desperate here. And I'm willing to grasp at a couple of straws and lose decisively with a different guy on the mound. So I'm ready for Jesse Chavez to get a shot, give him one spot start, and see what he can do. Worst case scenario, you lose again. That's what we're doing anyway right now.
Yeah, this whole thing amazes me, because throughout the winter we talked about how deep the starting pitching was from AAA up. And now it seems like none of them are getting the job done, right?
That's been the story of the season for the A's. They built up this incredible depth everywhere. You had the starting pitching was supposed to be so deep. And just they have all just fallen flat. Again, Malone and Griffin are coming around, but that rotation was supposed to be the strength. You look at the infield, you had all these options at second base. And what is it now? Eric Sogard starting there. Bless his heart, but I'd rather have someone else starting at second base. That outfield was 5 deep for 3 positions. But now you've got Chris Young still coming back off his quad injury. Coco Crisp just got back in the lineup yesterday. Josh Reddick is still on the DL. And it's starting to look like maybe he might need surgery on his bum wrist, which, by the way, could be an explanation for why he was hitting so poorly. A wrist injury for a hitter is pretty devastating. To the point where Brandon Moss took a turn in center field last week. There were supposed to be 4 center fielders on the roster this year, and our first baseman played a few innings in center. Think about that. The starting first baseman played a few innings in center field the other day. That is unreal. For a team whose whole game was supposed to be depth this year, it's just unfathomable. I mean, what are you supposed to do about that? You accounted for the injuries, and they came on so strong that at some point, if every single guy in the world gets hurt, what are you supposed to do?
like the other LA or California teams are doing. They struggle.
Yeah.
That's what it is. That's why you're not doing as well as you were. But the Oakland A's aren't doing that poorly, though, are they?
Nah, you know, I mean, this is the thing. This happens to the A's every year. They have all these struggles early in the season, and then something clicks, some new rookie comes up, or some Brandon Inge comes along, or whatever, and suddenly the team clicks and goes on a hot streak. I mean, it doesn't happen every year, but that's their MO. When the A's succeed, it's in the second half. And so as much as I want to get down on them, it's tough to because, you know, this is just what I'm used to this for the last 10, 15 years. This is their season every time. Everyone gets all down on them. They dig a hole and then they just burst out of it and shock everybody. And after a while, you got to quit being shocked when the same thing happens over and over. But there's one other guy I want to look at here, and that's Jed Lowrie. Love his bat, but his fielding is not cutting it at shortstop. There's a stat called defensive runs saved, which is supposed to measure roughly how many runs above or below average this player is on defense. And in general, you look at 10 runs one way or the other is one win. Lowrie has already been worth -8 defensive runs saved. So he's cost the A's 8 runs or almost a whole win with his defense. By far the worst in the majors. Next worst, by the way, is your boy Ruben Tejada at -4. But, and even to put that even more in context, of all of the everyday shortstop in the majors last year, only two guys, Reyes and Jeter, put up worse than -8 for the whole season. This is a counting stat, so it accrues throughout the season. In one quarter of the season, Lowrie has already been worse than everybody in the majors except two guys for the whole season last year. So think about that. Also think about how terrible of a defensive shortstop Derek Jeter is now, but we won't get into that. Lowrie is also the worst in ultimate zone rating by a wide margin, but the sample is too small to really care about that. Rather than Lowrie at shortstop, this is what I would like to see. I would like to see Adam Rosales playing every day at short. He is nothing special, but he is a solid defender at short. He can handle the position without costing the A's 8 runs in a quarter of a season. And as icing on the cake, he's hitting a little bit. His OPS is over 800. Now, that won't last. But even if he just hit league average or slightly below league average, it would still be an upgrade overall at shortstop because you can move Lowrie to second and keep his bat in the lineup. His bat has been extremely valuable. His bat has been more valuable than his glove has been detrimental. So what if we keep his bat at a less important position? He's better at second than he is at short. I would like to see Rosales at short and Lowrie at second, with Sogard on the bench as the full-time utility man, because he's still a useful player there. Sogard is not good enough to be starting in the majors. He's not a good hitter at all. His defense is good, but not like Brendan Ryan good or anything like that. And so, you know, Sogard on the bench backing these two guys up, that would be an acceptable arrangement to me. But we got to get Lowrie out of shortstop because he is just killing us there. Stick him at second, keep that bat in the lineup. Let Rosales take his chance at shortstop, and I want to see how that works out.
Yeah, I think it will. Dude, great stuff tonight. Thank you so much for being a part of it.
Hey, thanks a lot, Phil. Appreciate it.
All right, that was Alex Hall, and you can find him at athleticsnation.com, and I insist you do. It's the top Oakland Athletics site for a reason. Coming up next, truebluela.com's Eric Steven will be here to talk Dodger baseball, and we'll be right back. If you're moving to the Atlanta area or simply looking to buy that new dream home, we'll look no further than to real estate agent Latrissa Friesen. Latrissa has over 10 years in real estate experience, and she's anxious to put you in your brand new home. For more information, you can contact Latrissa at latrissa.com. That's LETRISSA.com. Are you tired of boring sports websites that spout the same old company line? If you are, then I'd invite you to stop over to thesportsgoons.com. The Reggie commentary and a weekly podcast highlighting today's issues is second to none. That's thesportsgoons.com. The new media has arrived. Stitcher Smart Radio is an award-winning, free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nason Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today. And never miss another Phil Nason Show. Looking for the latest information on your favorite sports team? Why not check out 15-year-old founder Trevor Uhrens, ProSportsExtra.com. Updated daily by a staff of over 30 writers, ProSportsExtra.com is the place to be. You can check them out, and I insist that you do, at ProSportsExtra.com. Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at aridihotel.com or email them at reservations@aridihotel.com. Hi, this is Phil Nason from The Phil Nason Show and This Week in Tennis. When I'm looking for sports information, my first stop, as well as yours should be, sports-kings.com. Great information, scores, highlights, and exceptional commentary. You can find it all there at sports-kings.com. This Week in Tennis is a weekly tennis program covering all aspects of professional tennis. The most controversial tennis show anywhere deals with issues no one seems to want to touch. For music and hard-hitting commentary, please visit philnasons.com.
Ladies and gentlemen,
tonight we come together.
Cool. And I think it's cool.
Somebody's going to be having fun tonight.
All I want to do is go have a good time. It's all about
tonight. Phil Nason.
Some of the things that these people say.
Jimmy Z.
That is such twisted logic.
Alex Jones.
You heard it here first. Now it's mainstream news.
Weeknights starting at 10 Eastern.
Okay, well, let's go party. Yeah, tomorrow can
wait till tomorrow. Ah, it's a lot of fun. I said tomorrow can wait till tomorrow. It's all about tonight. And we'll have fun, I promise. Yeah, it's
all about tonight. Weeknights on the Talk Superstation. Come on. It's all about tonight.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. It is Friday afternoon, May the 17th, 2013. And on the line with me to talk LA Dodgers baseball from TrueBlueLA.com, Mr. Eric Steven. Eric, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Phil. How are you this week?
Well, my fantasy team would be better. Otherwise, everything is perfect. How about yourself?
Doing well. Dodgers got a few wins this week, so it's definitely sort of brightened the mood here in Southern California.
You know, I was making some initial notes, as I do, because usually you guys just take over, which is the way I like it. And I said to myself, this is the first time that Eric and I have talked Dodger baseball in about 6 weeks where we don't have an injury to talk about.
Yeah, it's relatively light, although, you know, there is one, I mean, the Dodgers did activate Zach Greinke, and I know what we're going to talk about that. But to make room for him, they did put Josh Beckett on the DL. So it's like there is that. You know, it wouldn't be a Dodger season without you know having one injury come back without another. So he has a little bit of a groin thing. I'm not sure how long he's going to be out, but he's the six different starting pitcher to go on the DL this year for the Dodgers. So they're sort of racking up. frequent flyer miles or frequent frequent visit miles to the doctor's office and things like that. But I don't expect this to be that serious of an issue. We're still waiting to hear sort of what the just how long he's going to be out, but he shouldn't be back before too long.
Well, yeah, I kind of figured that they may put him there. So I didn't even really consider that an injury compared to the other ones that you've had this season.
Yeah.
Zach Greinke's back. He had a nice little afternoon, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing, really, if you think about it, because he broke his collarbone on April 11th, and here he was just over a month later. He was supposed to be out 8 weeks after surgery, and he made it back in under 6 weeks. So he really worked hard to get back, and I think he actually thought, Greinke thought he was going to get back sooner, which was kind of amazing. But the Dodgers were worried. They're still worried about any sort of random collision, or maybe if he dives for a ball that hits someone the wrong way or something like that. But I think they're just being a little overly cautious. But, yeah, nothing happened last night. They sort of put him on a bit of a pitch count. He pitched 5 1/3, I believe it was. And but, yeah, he threw a little over 80 pitches. So he should be ready. It's almost like spring training, building up his arm strength again. And he should be ready to go full bore about next time out. And he allowed one run. And he's, you know, having him back of Clayton Kershaw in that rotation just really it's really strengthens it.
Yes, it does. You know, the most impressive part about this, 4 strikeouts, no walks. He gave up a home run, but he does that from time to time, and that's expected usually from him. But the one thing that amazed me is that they say he was already throwing like a week after the surgery. That's incredible.
It really is. Obviously, you know, wasn't doing any sort of heavy throwing, but you know, the saving grace of him, the whole thing is that the collarbone was on the left side. So you know, it's certainly a part of his delivery, but not. It would have been catastrophic almost on the right side. Would have been out for much longer. But so he was able to sort of, you know, still stay in shape and run and do all that kind of stuff, but also sort of do light work on the side. So his arm never really shut down. So he still was sort of getting full use of it and doing things at least as much as he could while he was rehabbing. So the training staff, I'll say this, they've been busy this year, but they're doing a really good job of trying to they've been getting people back pretty soon, and they're pretty aggressive on that. So that's sort of been a plus, I think. I mean, it's hard to, you know, you never know whether to blame the training staff for a bunch of injuries or what, but I think it's part of it's a fluke. Part of it's some of the guys are older, not necessarily Greinke, but they are getting the players back healthy sooner than at least the initial diagnosis. So that's at least a positive sign in my book.
Absolutely. I thought for a minute there this week that Adrian Gonzalez would end up on the DL with that neck problem he had, but he seems to be okay, right?
Yeah, that's been sort of off and on for a little over a week. He strained a neck muscle, and he missed 3 different games. He's come out of 2 other ones early. But the weird thing is, he's still hitting. So, like, they're sort of playing it cautious with him. He said it's painful to do pretty much everything in the field and run. But he could still hit. He had like a hitting streak that was just snapped the other day. But he was hitting home runs and doubles. And so it was hard to sort of take him out. But at the same time, you know, they're sort of being cautious with him a little bit. But I don't think, unless something goes wrong here in the next few days, I don't expect them to have to put him on the DL.
No, and you pay him to hit anyway.
Exactly.
That's the bottom line. D. Gordon, pleasant surprise?
I mean, kind of. I think at this point they're committed to him, at least for the short term, when Hanley's out. Hanley Ramirez, I think we'll see. He's certainly, you know, D. Gordon is an energy player. He just needs to sort of prove that he can get on base at a passable amount. He's on a little bit of a slump now. He's like 3 for his last 22. But overall, he's shown positive signs. He's been a little up and down, where he's walked a little more than he did last year. you know, I think he has 5 walks and just under 50 plate appearances. So that's a positive sign. But he's still in the field making some wild throws, still a lot of throws in the dirt. But overall, you know, I think they're sort of happy with what they're getting from him, and he's just, they're not putting a ton of pressure on him. He's hit a little bit. If Carl Crawford sits or something, he'll hit at the top of the order, but he's been mostly hitting at the bottom of the order. So they're not putting a lot of pressure on him, and I think just letting him sort of develop. And I think they're happy with what they got so far, and he's definitely been exciting, at least at the times when he's got on base.
Yeah, he's walking. Yeah, he's getting up pace. He's bunting. He looks good so far. You know, last week we were going to talk about Don Mattingly a bit. Last week it was looking pretty bad. Now, since the last time we talked, the team has kind of started to win a little bit. Do you think his job's in jeopardy?
I always think, you know, it's one of those things you never know. If it gets to a point where they lost 8 straight games last week, and if something gets out of hand, even if it's not fair, and you know, maybe it wasn't his fault or anything, it's at some point, like, sometimes you just have to make a move. I don't think the Dodgers were sort of desperate enough or reactionary enough to do that just yet. And I think that's right. It's still a little early in the season, and they've had quite a lot of injuries, obviously. But I think they're going to give him the season, basically, to see if what he could do before sort of deciding what to do. I don't think they'll fire him unless something goes terribly wrong, you know, again, like maybe non-injury wise, or if they still don't hit or something. Because, you know, it's one of those things they always say, you can't fire 25 players, but you can. It's never fair. It's almost never fair, like a mid-season manager firing, because I'm sure there's extenuating circumstances. But if it's a case where they're still within striking distance, but they're slumping or something, and they feel the need to shake something up, maybe they do make a move. But I think he's probably safe until the end of the season, unless they really go south.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I'll tell you what, the fan base last week, especially, they were after his neck, weren't they?
Yeah, it got a little heated. You know, I get a lot of Twitter replies and people mailing in, emailing in stuff, and there's just some angry people out there. And it's weird because both, like, the Angels are also similarly struggling, and they, you know, Mike Socha's had far more of a history managing there, and he's on the hot seat. And I think there's just a Southern California baseball, both teams spent a ton of money going into the season. Everyone was sort of talking about possibly a freeway series, and they're both just both under 500 and both struggling, and there's like a sort of a cloud of negativity right now around Southern California baseball. But I don't know. I think it's almost feeding off of each other, like which team can disappoint the most. But the Dodgers sort of the last week won 4 out of their last 5, and turning things around a little bit, and so hopefully they can keep that up. And because you never want to get sort of sucked in that wormhole of losing, it's hard to get out of it.
Yeah, it is. But you know what? The difference between Anaheim and the Dodgers have lost a lot of players. They've lost quality players for extended periods of time, right? Where Anaheim hasn't.
Yeah, to a point. I think the Angels, they still haven't. Jared Weaver still hasn't pitched for them yet, and obviously, like, they didn't have as strong of a total pitching staff going in, but they've still been hurt badly. I think they have something like they've used, I think, 21 pitchers, and the Dodgers are right. They're like at 19, and the Dodgers had a crazy amount of injuries. So I think the Angels also had their share of injuries. But yeah, it's still I do think at least pitching wise the Dodgers do have the advantage. So in theory, with Greinke back, with Kershaw and Ryu sort of frontlining that rotation, it's going to be hard for them to go on a longer losing streak again. So, and hopefully they can sort of extend that into sort of a winning streak now.
And it looks like Brandon League is still getting the job done, right?
That's the one thing they're probably going to address soon. The problem with League is they paid him $22.5 million for 3 years, so he's going to be getting sort of important outs at some point later in the game, whether he's closing or it's like the seventh or the eighth inning. So they do need him to pitch better. It's not an issue where they could just say, okay, you're not the closer, we don't have to worry about you anymore. They're still going to need him to get big outs in the seventh or the eighth. But yeah, he's been struggling. He got the save on Wednesday night. But before that, he had allowed runs in like six of his last seven outings. He took back-to-back losses last week. He's actually technically only blown one save, but he also lost two other games, and he's really been just pitching badly. And the other night, Clayton Kershaw, he was one out shy of a shutout. He threw like 132 pitches, and they need the one out to sort of close out the game. It was a 2-0 close game with the tying run at the plate, and they brought in Kenley Jansen instead of Lee. And then on Wednesday, they brought in Jansen to get four outs in the seventh and the eighth, basically had him pitch to the middle of the Nats order, like the 2 through 6 guys, and then had Lee come in the ninth to face the bottom of the order. So while Lee still got the save, I think you're seeing sort of a sea change now where Jansen, I don't know if they're ready to sort of name him closer yet, but I think he's going to get the majority of the tough assignments, at least going forward.
So it's now down to a closer by committee.
Almost. I think maybe if it's like a 2 or 3 run lead or something, they would still go to Brandon League. But they're going to, if they need a tough out and it's the heart of the order, I would bet on them sort of picking Jansen, at least for now.
Yeah, it does make sense, I guess. I think it does. I like Jansen better, honestly.
Yep. Yeah, me too.
And from a fantasy standpoint, Jansen is much better.
Yeah, it's one of these things, too. Like, from a fantasy standpoint, you want the saves and the big strikeouts and stuff. And Kenley, to his credit, has always said he doesn't care when he pitches. I think he sort of, in the back of his mind, he knows, like, he's the better one. So he's been sort of taking the high road. But I think if I'm his agent, I'm thinking he probably does want to pitch tonight because he could rack up save totals and then make some money in arbitration. But as of right now, he's just the guy getting really important outs, but maybe not necessarily getting the saves.
Okay, last question before we go. We got about a minute, Eric. What are you looking forward to this week?
So the Dodgers hit the road. They go to Atlanta and Milwaukee, so it'll be a bit of a tough stretch, and then they return home to face St. Louis. So that's a tough 9-game stretch. I think they've won two straight series now. I think they just keep that mindset. They're still not at 500 yet, so if they keep trying just winning series, if they could win, like say, of those 9 games, 5 or 6 of the 9. Is probably a good stretch for them. But if they could put something together better than that, obviously that would be great. But I think, yeah, look for them. If they could win a couple road series, that's a big positive sign for them. So I think that's what I'm looking for this week.
Yep, I agree with you completely, man. Great stuff. Thanks so much for being a part of it, Eric.
As always, thank you, Phil.
Thank you. And you can find Eric Steven over at truebluela.com. And I insist that you do. It's the number one Dodger site for a reason, because these guys work hard. Coming up next, Mark Berman and I will be talking New York Mets baseball, and we'll be right back.
Stitcher Smart Radio is an award-winning, free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nation Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today and never miss another Phil Nason show.
Looking for the latest information on your favorite sports team? Why not check out 15-year-old founder Trevor Urenz, ProSportsExtra.com. Updated daily by a staff of over 30 writers, ProSportsExtra.com is the place to be. You can check them out. And I insist that you do at ProSportsExtra.com.
Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine, as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at aridihotel.com or email them at reservations@aridihotel.com.
Hi, this is Phil Mason from The Phil Mason Show and This Week in Tennis. When I'm looking for sports information, my first stop, as well as yours should be, sports-kings.com. Great information, scores, highlights, and exceptional commentary. You can find it all there at sports-kings.com.
This Week in Tennis is a weekly tennis program covering all aspects of professional tennis. The most controversial tennis show anywhere deals with issues no one seems to want to touch. For music and hard-hitting commentary, please visit philnasons.com.
Ladies and gentlemen,
tonight we come together.
Cool. And I think it's cool.
Somebody's going to be having fun tonight.
All I want to do is go have a good time. It's all about
tonight. Phil Nason.
Some of the things that these people say.
Jimmy Z.
That is such twisted logic.
Alex Jones.
You heard it here first. Now it's mainstream news.
Weeknights starting at 10 Eastern.
Okay, well, let's go party then. Yeah, tomorrow can
wait till tomorrow. Ah, it's a lot of fun. I said tomorrow can wait till tomorrow. It's all about tonight. And we'll have fun, I promise. Yeah, it's all
about tonight. Weeknights on the Talk Superstation. It's all about tonight.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. It is Friday afternoon, May the 17th, and winding up the show is our friend from BloggingMets.com, Mr. Mark Berman, for the weekly New York Mets Report. Mark, how you doing tonight? What's up?
Good. I see you're saving the worst for last. And I don't mean me. I mean the Mets, obviously.
Well, not you. You're not the worst, but yeah.
No, no.
Good grief. But at least we have Rick Ankiel now to the lineup. That ought to be interesting.
I'm telling you, now you can start printing the playoff tickets. Because we have Rick Ankiel. Actually, I don't think it's an awful move. I mean, it's not a move for the future at all. But he's a good defensive guy. Apparently, he's really well-liked in the clubhouse. When the Astros released him, the team was really upset because they all liked him. So that could be a positive. And you know what? If he hits a home run every now and then, he'll be better than anything the Mets have out there.
Yeah, it's always good to have a cheery, optimistic, likable guy in the clubhouse when your team sucks.
Yeah. And they do suck.
And they do suck. Oh, my own. I don't even know where to start, but, you know, Ankiel, that was kind of a funny thing. His bat and his glove didn't arrive, so he used John Neese's glove. And then he screwed up that one ball that was hit to him.
Yeah. No, it was Scott Rice's glove.
Or Scott Rice's glove.
And Rice was the guy on the mound who gave up that hit. But here's what I don't get. I mean, I understand you don't travel with your bats, but when he got released from the Astros, wouldn't he just take his glove with him and throw it in a bag? Apparently he didn't. I don't know if that's common practice.
You know,
it's kind of weird that you wouldn't take your glove with you.
It could be that he had it in his house and he flew to New York to discuss signing and then ended up starting in center field.
Could be.
Try to be optimistic with that one.
Yeah.
But Ankiel's going to strike out a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And, well, we'll see what he does. I think that means the end of the experiment with Kirk Nieuwenhuis, eh?
Yeah, I mean, Ankiel's a lefty, Nieuwenhuis is a lefty. Yeah, he might be done. I mean, unless he learns how to hit in the minor leagues this year, I don't expect to ever see him back. Which is kind of a shame because obviously defensively he's really good, and offensively he started out last season so well, and you know we all had such great hopes for him, and he just lost it.
Yeah, you know what I don't understand, though, is why they didn't just put Jordani Valdespina out there and just let him learn.
I agree. We've been saying that all along. He's one of the only young Mets with potential. So let him figure it out. But the Mets don't like him. They just really don't like him.
Nor do his teammates, it seems.
Yeah, and it must be worse than we imagined because, you know, with the whole nonsense of getting plunked and everything, no one defended him. No one said anything in his defense. So there must be a lot of stuff that we don't know about that he's done in the locker room. So maybe he's way more immature than we can imagine.
Probably. Plus, he's really talented.
Yeah.
And most of the Mets aren't.
Yeah, which is why he definitely deserves a chance. Yeah,
absolutely. And more importantly, why probably people don't like him so much.
Yeah, that's true too.
But this whole thing with getting plunked by the Pirates, you know, that was in retaliation for him strutting and showboating when he hit a home run the day before. What did you make of all that? Because caused a ruckus, didn't it?
Yeah, I understand you don't want to show up a pitcher by, you know, pimping, as they called it. But my thing was the Mets were down by 10 runs at that point, or 8-9 runs, whatever it was. So it wasn't really showing anybody up because the Mets were losing the game and it was the ninth inning. So I understand if the Mets were up by 10 and he did that, then fine. That's something you shouldn't have done. But I don't really get what he did that was so bad. And it's not like he raised his hands in triumph and skipped around the bases. He flipped his bat and watched the ball a little bit, which a lot of players do. So I really don't see what the big deal was. As far as him getting hit, if he broke one of those unwritten baseball rules, then fine, he got hit. But I think the Mets could have just shown a little more support than they did.
Well, LaTroy Hawkins said, what am I going to do, hit the guy? Hit somebody, yeah. Get in a fight? He said, Jordani put us in a very difficult position. What do you do? And then that started the whole mess with Terry Collins because he said it was no big deal. I mean, that's part of the unwritten code. You know, you don't show somebody up,
right?
Apparently.
But you know what? Every time A-Rod hits a home run, he gets that big look on his face and he throws the bat and stuff. And I mean, I guess I'm not comparing A-Rod to Valdespin because A-Rod has earned where he is through steroids, maybe. but it seems like he does it and no one – he's not hit every time he's up. So I don't know. I don't get it.
Well, I think it has to do with who Jordani is, and he probably chirps a lot in the dugout too. I'm sure of that.
Yeah, true.
And anyway, so Terry Collins says, I don't answer to fans, and that caused a big storm. I mean, the New York radio media ripped him a new one to the point where he had to apologize. I don't think he had anything to really apologize for. I think people take these things too personally sometimes, don't you?
Absolutely. I read the quote and I was like, okay, no big deal. I didn't even write about it on my blog because I didn't think it was a big deal. I didn't think he was putting down the fans. I think what he just meant was he's not going to answer to people who don't know what's going on in the clubhouse. And he's right. We don't know what's going on in the clubhouse. So what he said was right. I don't think he was insulting anyone. So I think, you know, that was much ado about nothing, I think.
Exactly, but it turned into a big ugly mess, like most circuses do. And then it just dropped a lot of elephant poo all over the place, and it's bad.
Yeah.
You know what, it's bad enough when the team sucks, and now you've got everyone chirping. Now people are starting to question whether Terry Collins should be the manager. People are talking about Wally Backman. Let me tell you something, if the second coming of Christ came, he couldn't manage that team to a victory.
I agree. No
they
one
suck.
Yeah, nobody can manage this team. I mean, as I've said many times in the past, I didn't like Collins when they hired him. I really like him a lot now. Strategically, I disagree with some of the things he does, but I think he's doing the best job he can possibly do with this team, and I don't see anyone else doing a better job. I mean, put Tony La Russa on that team, and they're still going to lose. My guess is he's going to get fired at the end of the season because someone's going to have to take the blame for it, and certainly Alderson's not going to fire himself. So Collins is going to be fired, and it's not going to be fair.
Yeah, what do? They give him Rick Ankiel.
Yeah. Yeah, they can't expect him to work miracles with the players he's got.
Like we say in tennis, you can't turn crap into sunshine or make sunshine out of crap.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that's just the way it is. I mean, it's not that they're bad athletes, because obviously they're at the major league level, but I don't know if they'd have – I don't know if they could even beat the AAA team down in Vegas.
No, they're just not a good team. I mean, again, the outfield has no hitting. Mike Davis, I can't believe he's doing it again.
I can't.
Hitting 157. I couldn't imagine that he was going to do this again. And Ruben Tejada has – he used to get a lot of timely hits. Now he's hitting 223. He's getting nothing. I mean, and Buck has cooled down. So you have David Wright, who's doing well, and Murphy's now hitting after slumping a little bit. So those they have two guys who could hit out of eight. You can't win games like that. And you have starters. You have one starter who can pitch, and the rest of them can't. The bullpen is mediocre as usual. How are you going to win games?
You don't. Nice did pretty well tonight against, or I should say, Thursday night against St. Louis.
Yeah, Thursday day game, our time here.
Right.
I actually didn't see the game, but yeah, he pitched seven innings, let up two runs, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's nice. The Mets, he must pitch well for the Mets to even be respectable. And there was a lot of talk the past few days that he got into some bad habits. There was a knot in his shoulder or something. So apparently he had a long bullpen session and he worked out some things, and it showed apparently in today's game. So hopefully he can keep it up.
We hope so. But back to Ike Davis. Mm-hmm. Now what do you do with him?
I'm still against putting him in the minors because I don't think it's going to help. You just have to hope he breaks out of it like he did last year. And you know what? If we're going to talk about putting Ike Davis in the minors, why don't we talk about putting Lucas Duda in the minors? I mean, Duda's hitting .211. Everyone's obsessed with his on-base percentage and all his walks and stuff, but he's hitting .211. That's unacceptable.
Yeah, you're right. 156 for Ike Davis, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, obviously Davis is doing more poorly, but it's not like Duda's lighting up the world. And everyone makes the big deal about the walks. I don't care about walks. Walks mean nothing to me.
What does Duda have, 8 home runs now?
8 home runs, 14 RBIs.
Big
what a ratio.
Runs.
I don't even know how that's possible.
I think Jason Bay has more RBIs now.
Probably.
The Mets are paying.
And, everyone talks about Lucas. Oh, he hasn't had a lot of RBI opportunities. That's true. He hasn't, but he's hitting, like, I think under 200 with runners in scoring position. So it's not like he's making the best of the small opportunities he gets. Dude is terrible.
Well, the whole story, 8 home runs, 14 RBIs.
Yeah.
But Ike Davis, his slash line is almost identical to what it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
Last year he had Valley Fever, apparently. What does he have this year?
I don't know. But yeah, last year I think he was hitting 157 or 159 was his low point. So he's there right now. So if history is going to repeat itself, now's the time to make his move.
Yeah, he made it all the way up to 172 on Monday. He's plunging.
Yeah, yeah. 157.
He's a bad investment.
Yeah,
I think they ought to trade him.
Nobody would take him now.
Yeah. They should have traded him last year when I wanted him traded.
Yeah. You know, here's an interesting concept. Lucas Duda is going to be eligible for arbitration after this season because he's a Super 2, and Davis will be in the second year of arbitration. Let's say, for argument's sake, they don't get any better, and this is what they do all year, that they both hit like 200. Do you non-tender these guys? I mean, Davis is costing $3 million this year. Duda's probably going to be in line for $2 million next year, and Davis will probably get $4 million next year. Do you pay these guys that much money after that kind of season?
That's a good question.
Thank you.
That really is. I don't know. I guess you non-tender them.
What yeah, I mean, it's probably
for too, nothing.
It's too early to even think about that, but it's something to just keep in the back of your mind that it's possible.
Since I'm already sick of Ike Davis, I'm going to keep that in the front of my mind all week. but seriously, good spots this week. John Nice.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Harvey pitched okay, even though he got roughed up a bit.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember that game. Yeah, he started out poorly, and then he picked up towards as the game went on.
Yeah, that's going to happen time and time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and he ended up pitching seven innings, letting up two runs. So two runs, I think. So yeah, he's fine. He's the one guy we don't have to worry about, and hopefully that'll last the entire season. Yeah, just like John Buck, he's going to cool off, but as long as he doesn't start getting racked around every game.
I tell you what, though, getting Buck was better than what we had last year.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's nice to watch a game when you don't have to watch the back at, or look at their our catcher's numbers running to the backstop.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, 10, I mean, I think I said this last week. He has 10 homers, 31 RBIs. If Buck had that for the entire season, I'd be happy.
It's more not than the other guys.
RBIs, but the 10 home runs, yeah. Yeah, the other. And apparently, Buck has more home runs this season than Mets catchers had in the last two seasons.
Or maybe three.
I think it's two.
Okay, two. Because Rod Barajas had 14 home runs that 1 year, right?
Yeah, or nine or something like that.
Yeah, I forget those big numbers.
Yeah.
But seriously, though, I like John Buck. He's okay, and now we don't have to worry about Travis for at least till September. When do we bring Zach Wheeler up? Now.
Well, he's just got a cortisone shot, so that's not going to happen, and he's going to miss a start. Oh, I would probably have brought him up already, but the Mets will use this to delay his arbitration. He won't come up till mid June.
I don't like it when pitchers get cortisone shots.
Yeah, it's not a good sign. But apparently, I mean, I don't know specifics, but it could have been a lot worse. And who's to say it's not going to get worse? But
wouldn't it be something if, God forbid, Zach Wheeler winds up never pitching for the Mets and Travis doesn't ever play for the Mets and all those yo-yos who said, well, we can't trade them for Giancarlo Stanton. How could you trade away our future? Then you'll have to reconsider some things.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And I apologize to Mark and I for being rational and logical.
Yeah. I don't think that'll happen. I think they'll both play for the Mets. Who's to say they're going to be stars, but they'll at least put on Met uniforms at some point, I predict.
Sure. Picture day is a nice day for that.
Yeah.
I have no – you know what? When a catcher gets hurt twice in the legs, I worry.
Yeah. I just worry not even just a catcher, just about a player who's injury prone. I mean, and I think we've talked about this in the past, and I wonder if, like, certain people's bodies are just prone to injury. Like, you know, Cliff Floyd, Moises Alou were always injured. So it can't just be bad luck. There's got to be some sort of structural thing in their body, I would think, that kind of helps break things down. I'm not a doctor.
And neither do I, nor do we play one on TV.
No.
Great stuff, Mark. Thank you so much for being a part of it.
Hey, no problem.
All right, and that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. You can find Mark Berman, and I insist that you do, at bloggingmets.com. All right, folks, great week we had. Next week it's going to even be bigger and better. Until then, you all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly, thanks for listening. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you, and I thank you.